Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head on over to cageclub.me. That is cageclub.me.
Please play this song on the radio. Please play this song on the radio.
Hey, it's your Now and Again. This is an EP. We're talking pop music on the other side of the ocean and the deep, deep history of Now and Again. With us today, we've got Nico. Nico, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on our first international episode.
Yeah, that's right. We have Irish Now pop correspondent Tom with us today. Tom, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
You know, been worse, been better, but you're how's things over on the other side of the pond, as they like to say, in the land of Tesco's.
Tesco's, yeah, pretty good. At the moment, it is very cold though. September tends to get pretty cold in Ireland, so it's not good.
I need to jump in with two things. Number one, I don't have nifty title. I don't have, like, domestic pop database or anything, and I find this egregious. Number two...
I thought you were in Wikipedia.
I'll take it. You know my moniker. Number two, you should always be having a great day because you guys have the far superior Kit Kats.
That is true. All our chocolate is way better
than
American chocolate.
Your chocolate is so great. When I lived in Orlando... there's a shop in Disney World that actually just imports the European chocolate and European candy. And all of my friends who were doing the Disney International College program were like, if you have this and then you ever go back to American candy, you'll understand why we make faces when we eat your candy.
Yeah, I had a couple of bars when I was over there. They were pretty tasty.
Yeah, super amazing. Sorry, didn't mean to jump in.
No, that's quite all right. So where do we want to start?
Yeah, we're just going to talk just kind of pop music, how the other half of the world sees it. Because Now has this hidden history that I think a lot of Americans don't know about. There's about 15 years of Now That's What I Call Music from Europe that happened before we even got one. Do you have, you're around my age, I believe. Do you have a memory of those from when you were younger?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, when I was really young, I remember my older cousins were really into pop music, and they had like Now 21, 22, 23, all that, and that was like early 90s. And then when I was about, I was going to say about 14, 15, I started buying them myself. So it'd been about the Now 33 and Now 32, I think, were the sort of big ones that I had. We're up to 97, I think, at the moment, which just came out like 2 months ago.
Wow. By the time, I mean, by the time we get to 33 alone, at least one of Nico and I will definitely be dead. Like, that's so far away. The early ones, from what I was looking at, had, we're going back to, like, Culture Club and you know, mid-80s, yeah.
I remember my aunt had a vinyl of Now 2, which was just, like, even when I was, like, 15, 16 and I was listening to these records, just thinking back to when I wasn't even born yet and they were still making them, like, that was just insane to me.
I think it's a really interesting thing that we're bringing up the fact that there is, by the time America got to it and it caught on with the masses, there was already an existing back catalog, and it was an entire way of life somewhere else that we weren't unaware of. And by way of life, I mean the Now industry has to employ some volume of Europe, you know what I mean? Like the money that it makes and how it, you know, redistributes to artists. I guess I'm just hoping you guys have a much better system for paying people than we do. But it's not unlike comics, not to make everything about my wheelhouse, but one of the funny things is when people say to me, oh yeah, I read the Captain America comic, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. If you say the Captain America comic, I don't know what's wrong with you. There's like 2,000. Which one do you mean? There's, you know, 1,000 Superman, there's 1,000 Batman, man, and it's such a rich history, and it's something that by the time another age group gets to it, it's just about unrecognizable. There is really, yeah, sure, there's elements that bind it together, but the Batman of 1947 is not the Batman of 1972, is not the Batman of 1999, is not the Batman of Now. And when I was looking at the European Nows to get ready for this, you can actually really watch the idea of Britpop and Europop, like, shift the notion of what it is, and what Europe finds attractive. I also discovered that the number of European countries that get to stick their name before the word pop is just unrealistic. Everybody is under the impression they have their own genre of pop music, and that just has to change.
Yeah, there's Britpop anyway is the main one that we used to get here. I don't think there's any Irish pop or era pop.
You guys churn out quite a number of phenomenal bands, though. You guys had Boyzone.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Oh, Boyzone, Westlife.
I was about to say, you had Boyzone and Westlife. I mean, like, I think
those
the only
are the
one
big two.
Yeah, the only one you can't take credit for is like Take That and like Atomic Kitten.
Yeah, pretty much. And even that, I think one of the Atomic Kitten girls is Irish.
And there you go. There you have it. I guess everyone is really half Irish.
And one of the Girls Aloud girls is Irish.
Yeah. You guys churn them out, man.
Yeah, and it's like Louis Walsh, the sort of the Irish Simon Cowell, is a really big name in Ireland, and he's a really big influence on that sort of pop scene. Yeah, he's responsible for Westlife and Boyzone.
Bewitched.
Bewitched, yeah.
Blame it on the weather, man.
Before.
Knew
all
I'd
that
get
denim.
There.
Just way too much denim.
You mentioned Simon Cowell. I mean, and I know that he is more, England. But how much... When American Idol came out, he was kind of touted here, much like Gordon Ramsay was when he kind of came to America as, like, the guy who did that thing over there.
Yeah.
Was he quite as much of a household name?
Yeah, definitely, because, I mean, X Factor, Pop Idol, all that stuff ran back years before mm-hmm. it came to America.
Yeah, that was
at least
like
4 or 5 years.
That and yeah. Doctor Who over there, I swear to God, you guys don't... I mean, oh, EastEnders. No, not EastEnders. What's
yeah,
the one?
Yeah, EastEnders, all that stuff.
EastEnders?
No, EastEnders is one.
Coronation
them, yeah.
Street?
Coronation Street.
Right? You guys have a few things other than Doctor Who and X Factor. Oh, and you have the Eurovision Song Contest.
Can we please talk about Eurovision? Because my, about 6 or 7, probably more, actually. I think it was when I was in college, so we're going back maybe almost 10 years now. When it became a meme on the internet was when that borderline faux guar band was flying through it.
Yeah, Lordi, I believe they were
yes,
called.
Yes, and now there's a much better Lordi out there that's more in the now and again wheelhouse. But what the hell is Eurovision? Please explain that to the now and again American trash listeners.
To explain it is sort of to remove the mystique, I think. The main thing is that, like, it's part of the broadcasting union. So, like, there's a big broadcasting union in Europe.
That's what Brexit was about, right? A bunch of people left the broadcasting union.
Yeah, they left the broadcasting union because they were sick of all the regulations. Mm-hmm. But they basically got together sometime in the 70s and just started doing this thing where each broadcasting union would send a representative, and that representative would sing a song which would be voted on by the people of the countries. And it's sort of gaudy and tacky, and it's absurd, but it's, I don't know, it's something I grew up with, especially being in Ireland. We won it like 5 times in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I think we're still the record holder for the amount of winners. I think we've won it a total of 8 times. It's definitely part of the tapestry of Irish pop music. You can't really avoid it. But certainly in the last sort of 10 years, it's really been pushed back into the background, especially since they split up the competition to be 3 parts now. So there's a semi-final, 2 semi-finals, sorry, and a final, because the broadcasting union had gotten so big that it was just, the shows were taking 4 or 5 hours to do. Like, the voting itself was half the show.
And who is voting on this? Is this just the people?
Yeah, it's phone votes, text votes. Obviously, text votes are a more recent thing. Online votes. And the people vote for other countries. They obviously can't vote for their own country.
Ah.
Points are assigned based on the amount of votes that every song is given. All the points are totted up at the end, and the winner the most points. And then the winner has to host the following year, which almost bankrupted Ireland in the 90s. We've won it 3 times in a row. And at that time, we were not a rich country. We have become since a much richer country, but at the time, we were still pretty poor. And my mother and father went to it in 93 to see the one where Riverdance came from, which I think is probably the biggest legacy that the Eurovision will ever have, is Riverdance and bloody Michael Flatley.
And bloody Michael fucking Flatley. When I say I'm half Irish, I mean, like, my mom was sort of like, Riverdance is coming to New York and suddenly our heritage is here. And it was one of those things where she was suddenly like, man, I wish we had gotten you into Irish step dancing lessons when you were a kid. And I was sort of like, no. So, for real, though, people don't realize the extent and effect Eurovision has had on worldwide pop music.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's sort of a mirror of pop music in a lot of ways as well. You'll see trends coming through via Eurovision and also sort of reflected in Eurovision from the current pop landscape. But then, like, say, in Ireland now, we've done a lot of weird sort of... All right, in 2008, this is going to be weird, we entered a turkey puppet as our entry, and he sang a song about the Eurovision.
That it was awesome.
Bizarre. It was very strange.
Don't you have to kind of at a certain point, like, someone has to, I don't know if spoof is the right word, but, like, look at that thing and go, hey, isn't this stupid, everyone? I mean, I bet there's a lot of parodies when it comes up every year, but, like...
Yeah, and in Ireland, because it is such a part of our landscape culturally, there have been a lot of parodies and sort of, to go back to Pop Idol and X Factor and such, in the mid-2000s, as a way of selecting our artists for that year's Eurovision, they started up what was called Eurostar, and it was essentially a pop idol with the winner getting to go on and perform at the Eurovision. And that was a huge deal here in Ireland. Like, it was actually bigger even than the Eurovision.
Wow.
Now, it went on for weeks and weeks, and it was just, it captivated the whole country. I remember watching it every Sunday night. I'd get home, arrive back in college and in my dorms and just watch it, just because it was on, and, you know, get high. And make fun of it.
That actually really reminiscent of the fact that American Idol did extraordinarily well over here and World Idol got no traction.
I've never heard of World Idol. What's that?
World Idol was this special thing they did where, like, all of the idols that had won in X number of years from all of the versions all over the world came together. And, like, Kelly Clarkson was specifically hypercritical of it because she was paid, like, $500 or something to appear.
Oh, Jesus.
And was really mistreated by the contract she signed with American Idol. But, yeah, it's sort of that thing. You're asking people to appreciate another country's music is so tricky sometimes. I've never understood how Eurovision is popular outside of there's a lot of us, let's vote for our own country.
As I said, you can't vote for your own country, so I think that sort of helps it, because
yeah,
it forces you to expand your horizons and see what other countries are doing. Europop is Europop. A lot of the stuff in that shows up in Eurovision over the years is just a very sort of bland Europop. Probably the most famous of that being Epic Sax Guy, if you remember that particular meme.
No.
But it will be in the liner notes.
Yeah, it was a guy with a saxophone dressed up like a lunatic doing a really good dance while playing sax.
I love it already.
A 10-minute loop of that became a meme on the internet for about 2 years.
Nico, can we briefly imagine like a mid-90s America vision, like with like the sections? Like you get like a grunge out of the Pacific Northwest, you got Orange County ska, East Coast, West Coast hip-hop, the Juggalos get Michigan. Country, obviously.
I'm also imagining how well that would have all come together in the 90s in terms of our cultural landscape of what people thought was acceptable music. One of the things that we talk about is what was in charge of the music scene in the world at the time. It's so hard to discuss that because there is no point at which hip-hop did not dominate the West Coast in the 90s. At the same time, the 90s gave the rise of country music as a worldwide phenomena, while on the East Coast, we were super obsessed with dance and club music. At the same time, grunge was everywhere in 1995. So was Jewel and Sarah McLachlan and Tori Amos and Joan Osborne and Meredith Brooks. You were starting to get those, like, you know, emotional singer-songwriters that appear in the early nows, like Duncan Sheik and Tonic and all that kind of crap. So it's literally impossible for me to imagine that. The other thing that we need to remember for 2 seconds is, and this is something I learned on my Disney College program, my friends from Europe would be like, so how far away is New Jersey? And I would be like, New Jersey is, by car, 20 hours. And they would be like, oh my God, and it's the same country?
That happened to me when I was in Japan. Someone was like, yeah, we're going to come to visit New York. I was like, that's awesome, cool, like, let me know, and I'll come show you around. And they're like, yeah, we're gonna, like, drive down to Disney when it happens. And I was like, how long are you? They're like, a week? I'm like, no, oh, no, you don't understand how distance works. And I mean, I get it, because
yeah.
I went to San Francisco, like, a year ago, and I was like, I'll drive up to Oregon to see my friend, and he was like, it's 8 hours away. Is this when you don't know your own geography? It's like, it's weird.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine the vastness of America, especially like compared to Ireland, because you can drive from the southmost point to the northmost point in 6-7 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ, we have states you can't cross that fast.
Exactly, yeah. It's hard to fathom that, and I think that's why you have such a broad spectrum of these little pockets of music that sort of evolved on their own, because for all intents and purposes, the West Coast of America and the East Coast of America are different countries.
You'd be amazed. The West and East Coast of America, other than the fact that the East Coast has a very short fuse for everything, and the West Coast has a very long fuse for everything, and they prefer Coke on the East Coast, and they prefer, like, meth on the West Coast, they're pretty much buddies. It's the rest of the country that we just don't
fucking
understand.
Yeah, if you could build, like, a Elon Musk sky bridge across, we could just, you know, have a partnership.
But you know what? And talking about it that way, I do think there is something. I'm going to do that thing I do where I'm like, hey, let's talk about the evolution of hip-hop in terms of other things. But
let's go for it.
Let's talk about the evolution of hip-hop in terms of other things for 10 seconds. If what we're saying is that the geographic relationship, like kind of like the ratio of people and unique culture in Europe should be considered what we have as states in America. I know I said that all jumbled, but countries are to Europe as states are to the United States of America in terms of the smallness, the pockets, the concentration of people. It actually makes a lot of sense that there would be Britpop, Italia pop. I only really brushed through some of the other ones that like to call themselves their own pops, because we have West Coast rap, we have East Coast rap.
Atlanta.
Your dirty South rap you've got.
Atlanta has hyphy. Yeah. St. Louis has its very own unique style of rap.
Yeah, I've been talking Nelly a lot. And hey, Eminem from Michigan, and do not forget the Juggalos in Michigan.
You know what? I gotta be real. If you actually think about it, Michigan rappers have a really aggressive style. That's something that the Juggalos and Eminem would both have in common. A hyper-aggressive, almost sense of oafish masculinity. No offense, Michigan. I know you could all come at me and club me to death. But, like, I do think there's something really interesting that you're making a fantastic point on. So I guess we do have to say that the Eurovision of the United States just is X Factor and American Idol, where it's many people performing many different genres.
Are they really performing many different genres on those shows?
Let's at least take a step back and say, when the guy who came on auditioning for country music is told he has to do a Spanish guitar style song, I can almost promise you he's not doing a straight up Spanish guitar style song. He's going to do it infused with country in some way. So it's at least creating if there is a common genre, there is still a crossover element that creates a non-commonality.
Sure, but like Bad Guar is never going to be able to even get on.
They would get on America's Got Talent, no problem. America's Got Talent has the weirdest fucking acts all the time.
I think with Lordi as well, because it's sort of the people push it forward rather than it being something that's created by, you know, the likes of Simon Cowell, and that it is sort of, it's fabricated, whereas there is a sort of quote-unquote realness to the Eurovision because it is the popular, you know, what people voting for. So I think there's definitely that element to it that wouldn't really bleed into it if they did it in America.
And isn't that something else that kind of, and again, for those who are listening, I am aware that Ireland and England are separate places. But every year I hear about how there's like a big push to like push something to the top of the charts around Christmas time. That's like a gag. What is up with that?
Oh, yeah, I was going to actually ask you about that because I don't know if that's a thing over the water, but yeah,
it
that's
is not.
A huge deal here.
It actually kind of is.
Christmas number one.
Actually, we do
is
that.
It?
Yeah, we don't do it to quite the same extent, but there have been more than one time where there was a viral push to propel a song back onto the charts. One time, enough people made New Kids on the Block's Hangin' Tough number one on Total Request Live.
Okay, so yeah, little things like that, but this is like specifically centered around every year, every Christmas. Like, what is the number one song is like a big deal. Where does that come from?
It's a huge deal. I don't really know where it comes from, but it's certainly something that in both England and Ireland it is a big... There's always like people talking about it, you'll hear news about it. There's just always this sort of kerfuffle about it every year. And I think one of the particular reasons is because as an artist, you definitely want to have a Christmas number one because you are set for life if you get a Christmas
number. Really?
Because every year that song will be played all over Christmas. So like even if your song is terrible, if you somehow manage to get it to Christmas number one, people will hear that song every year for the next 20 years. There's songs like Frankie Goes to Hollywood have a really famous one, The Power of Love. Song has nothing to do with Christmas. Every single year you have to hear that song at Christmas because it's constantly on the radio, but because it was Christmas number one. Oh. And even, again, to bring it back to X Factor and all that, there was a show, Pop Stars, where the winner, they competed to have the Christmas number one. That was the show. And it was like Girls Aloud and another band that were like culled from the Pop Stars stable. And they were just put onto this show, and then the whole thing was you voted for your team or your band or whatever, the one you liked, by buying their single, which was a great way to make money, but I don't think they ever tried it again. Girls Aloud themselves obviously had a lot of success after that, but that was the main reason that they got pushed ahead.
I think I actually have to jump in and say, I think part of the reason we don't see a cultural phenomenon over this kind of stuff the same way is I really think we did stumble onto something really important when we first started talking, with the fact that we're 319 million people. Our country is so much bigger with so many more people. I think it is hard for us to get as wrapped up in something as a nation. You know, one of the things that people talk about is how Game of Thrones is all anyone will talk about. The largest viewership projection for Game of Thrones that there is places it below 2.5 Men at its peak.
Yeah, if there's anything that is equivalent to like a Christmas number one here, it's like who's playing the Super Bowl. because that is where Absolutely. The most eyes are going to be at
yeah,
once.
That'd be it, yeah. And like that's something that reaches even over here. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, people here will watch the Super Bowl just to watch the halftime show.
The halftime show gets higher ratings than the game.
It's the most watched thing every year. Stay tuned for next episode when we will talk about Katy Perry and more a little bit. Spoilers.
I love that halftime show.
Yeah, hers was pretty good. I mean, Michael Jackson really kind of started that in the 90s, and it's become really its own crazy monster. Anything equivalent, or is that the equivalent to the Christmas thing, or is there anything else?
I guess that'd be the nearest equivalent in terms of like a singular pop event of the year.
Well, except I think the Christmas thing, from what you've expressed, the Christmas thing is more about fans banding together to get what they want. The Super Bowl thing is whoever they feel like paying and don't want to have to deal with a racist criticism over. In that regard, it does feel a little bit, I just don't know that we have an equivalent.
Yeah, that's true. The Super Bowl is purely capitalist.
It's purely capitalist, decided by 7 old white guys sitting in a room somewhere.
I think it's been the Pepsi halftime show for the last 5 years or so.
Yeah. You know, what you're saying is in England and Ireland and the UK, it's
more populist. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a celebration of what brings you guys together as opposed to a corporation informing you what you're going to enjoy for the next 3 months. I don't know. Especially as I was doing like the research and the homework to be able to, you know, actually talk about this. I had been talking to one of my students the other day, and this, I promise it comes together and I'm not high at all. My student said to me, I made some comment about, have you ever heard of, okay, so My Everything by 98 Degrees is structurally identical to I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly.
Which is identical to Michael Jackson's, the one that where he's naked with Lisa Marie in the video.
You are not alone.
Yes, thank
no,
you.
No, this is actually much closer. I mean, oh, wow. The chord progress, it literally feels like the exact same song a half step off. Dun 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun. It's like it's identical down to the it shifts to the minor and then you get the seventh. It's flawlessly identical. It's frightening. And I said that to my student, and my student was like, you know, I really couldn't tell you who 98 Degrees is. And I was like, lol, okay. And she was like, no, I'm sorry, and I don't mean this disrespectfully. I'm 17, you're 31. The bands you liked growing up broke up before I was born. Yeah. And I very politely expressed to her, my sweet dear, if you think the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC broke up before 2000, I'm going to school you to death. The whole point that came out of it was she didn't, when I'm like, yeah, no, NSYNC set this record, the Backstreet Boys set this record, and then NSYNC broke it a week later, and I'm trying to explain all this to her. And one of the things that I discovered in my research for this that I guess created a parallel, take that holds like every goddamn fucking record in England ever.
Yeah, but a bunch, yeah.
They have like every biggest record ever. It's like them and Muse and Keane are like the most award-winning, most well-liked, most reputable band over their period. I can name one Take That song.
I can name zero.
Whatever went wrong, just tell me the song and I'll say, want you back. You'll be right.
That is their best song.
Want you back, said I want you back for good. It's a great song. It's actually, but I can see the video in my head. After that, I can name a handful of Robbie Williams songs.
Mm.
That's it. To Europe, this band that I'm like, haha, footnote. I guess that's kind of how my students feel when I'm like, if you don't understand the cultural impact of what NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys did to this country by remarketing our country as a teen nation paid for by adults, you just don't understand. One of the things I'm getting from this conversation is I just seriously do not understand Europop as an identity. not as like a genre of music, because I get the constructs. It's, you know, it's a lot of and you know, it's a lot of and you know, American pop music, but with a better beat. I guess I just don't understand the cultural identity of Britpop and Europop, because it sounds so much more, whereas our country likes to divide each other by music down to we have that whole anything but rap and country. It tennis sort of sounds to me like Europe is sort of like, hey, we're all fucking weird. Check out the music. It sounds a little bit more like a celebration, and that's kind of what music is supposed to be.
You definitely get that, and particularly on the continent, which is where all the main sort of Europop comes from. Yeah, there's definitely just that sort of celebration of like a shared culture. Take that being a slightly different situation, because
yeah, you can't even talk about
it. For those of us who aren't from that country, and those of us who aren't a living, breathing Wikipedia, what is Take That?
Do you mind?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I better say, just because I did like a whole bunch of research, so I have notes. Take that.
Continue.
Check his notes. Check his research. Give us the deets on these guys.
I mean, I have lived experience, so, you know.
Take that. We're a group where the lead singer was Gary Barlow, and he did a lot of the songwriting.
Yes.
Then there was Robbie Williams and the other guys. They had some, like, record number of pop top singles in the UK. They have, like, some of the highest selling tours of all time. They have some of the highest selling albums of all time. They recorded from, like, 1990 to 1995-ish. And then they got back together for a record in the mid-aughts. But I don't believe Robbie Williams was on that one. I believe he showed up for the 2010 one, according to my notes, Progress, where, according to Wikipedia, it became the fastest-selling album of the 21st century.
Wow.
And the second-fastest-selling album in British history. That's a direct quote.
I didn't even know that. Wow. That is impressive.
Then Williams and Orange left again. So it's one of those things. It's kind of like... It sort of seems to me like a Diana Ross and the Supremes thing. But what's shocking is, when Diana Ross leaves the Supremes, people care less. Which, because Mary Wells is amazing. When Robbie Williams leaves Take That, when he's the backing vocalist, it seems to gut them.
Robbie Williams is someone who has come up on the show very briefly. His one big song in America was Millennium.
He also had Angels, which Jessica Simpson covered.
Sure.
And then he had another number one with Rock DJ, where he stripped naked in the video and then pulled off his skin and was a dancing skeleton. So he's had at least 3 top 10 hits.
Interesting that he came from this band. So, I mean, he's massive. We learned, it was a Joey episode, possibly, where we learned about this. We were just like, this Robbie Williams guy. And to you, to us not knowing who this Robbie Williams is, Tom, to you, Robbie Williams is, and this Take That, what is this to you when that comes up?
I mean, obviously, I grew up with Take That because they were one of the dominant cultural forces in the 90s in the UK and Ireland. When Robbie left, that was an earth-shattering event for a lot of people. I remember, like, friends of mine crying about it and everything. He didn't start off as being the main guy in Take That, but certainly as time went by, he pushed more and more to the front because he had the charisma. He just had that, whatever what that was, he had it.
I think I can make a quick parallel for Chris. It's almost like if Justin never overtook JC from the early stuff where they're equal. It's almost as if Justin never overtook JC but quit just after they released No Strings Attached. It's like that level of jolt from my research.
This is the thing we've really been talking about a lot recently, is like Beyoncé leaving, Justin leaving, Omarion secondarily kind of leaving. It's just like a lot of these bands are pushing one person to the front and being like, all right, it's your run, take the ball, kid. But he just kind of, this wasn't you're the guy now. This was him being like, I'm the guy now.
Yes.
That was pretty much it. Yeah, he was just like, I'm going off on my own. And the music he came out with then was quite differently styled to what Take That were making. It was almost like he was making rock records nearly. And he was a huge star here for a number of years. Obviously, Angels was just everywhere for 2 or 3 years.
Oh,
when
God,
I was in...
yeah. Sorry, that brings me to a thing. I have a note. I have to ask you about how European covers culture is completely different than American covers culture. You guys will put the same song on the top chart over and over and over in a way our country will never let you get away with.
Probably most famously, we had the Oasis song Wonderwall and a cover in the top 5 of our charts.
At the same time?
At the same time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was a weird, like, novelty cover, not like a serious cover. It was very odd. But to go back to Robbie, yeah, he was a phenomenon. There's no other way to say it. And, like, I think he tried to break into America, but it never really held for him. And shortly after that, I think he sort of moved back into the background anyway. But he did one... Because I know you love Kylie. He did a song with Kylie, which I love.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, yeah. I love that one.
Which is really, really good. And that was on a covers album. Or no, sorry. It was a duets album. And he did a cover of Something Stupid with Nicole Kidman. That was big here. And I think it was a Christmas number one, in fact.
Oh, that's disappointing because that's not one of my favorite things.
No, it's not great.
It's pretty dreadful, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was big.
Any other artists, either the Pedia or Tom, you can think of that huge over there, never really had their cup of coffee over here?
We have a real-to-life Irish guy on the line, so we have to have a conversation about Boyzone and Ronan Keating.
Oh, good old Ronan.
How can you possibly have a conversation about European pop music without discussing the fucking phenomenon that was Boyzone.
All right, Tom, clue yeah, guys Boyzone like me were. In who are not in the Boyzone.
Get gayer, man.
Yeah, Boyzone were a boy group. They were created with the express purpose of taking on Take That.
Literally, a copycat rival.
Yeah, they were like, if you look at some of their early videos, like, there is just, you could just swap out the guys and there would be, you would not know the difference.
Creepy. My research led me to some weird corners of the internet this afternoon, let me tell you.
Yeah.
The volume of Ronan Keating real person slash out there is astronomical. I'm a gay dude, and I have a lot of gay sex, but if Tumblr is to be believed, Ronan Keating has had more gay sex than anyone on Earth.
I wasn't aware of that particular facet of his life.
It's just people writing stories about him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's an intense love of RPS with that guy, Real Person Slash. It's crazy.
Okay. We'll definitely link to that in the liner notes.
I showed Chris a video a number of weeks back of Boyzone's first appearance on television in Ireland.
That is hilarious. Definitely check the liner notes for that. They were end the slash, but also that.
Yeah, because that is just, they come on and they don't do a vocal performance. It's just dancing, because at the time they hadn't like had any songs ready.
No, and then
but
they did
Louis Walsh.
Yeah.
They just came on and did a dance.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
The host of the show is just like completely baffled by this. He's obviously been just like told, okay, just put these lads on, give them a quick 5 minutes on the thing, on the show, and just let them off. And he was bamboozled by this. And obviously then, afterwards, when he's doing the interview, he just spends the entire time making fun of them. But obviously, fair dues to the lads. They pulled through and they became one of the biggest pop bands in both England and Ireland. I think they're Take That hold every record. Boyzone hold the second version of every record.
I was actually about to say, Boyzone is literally one of the all-time highest-sellingest artists ever. Their international sales figures are beyond extraordinary. One of the things that I came across also is their reunion it's hard to look at their reunion as anything but goddamn, do we need to stop Take That from reclaiming a bunch of titles? Their reunion is literally 2 years later. They've churned out 2 records, or the third one on the way. The boys, the Westlife reunion has churned out 3 records, but only one of massive consequence, because only one had the original lineup back. But yeah, oh my god, Boyzone's discography, man. That shit's intense.
And a lot of covers in their discography as well.
Which is, that was the thing I was saying. Yeah. You guys love covers over there, which I don't know if that's just like, you guys are like, look, an artist is an artist, but a good song is forever, or something.
Certainly that to it, yeah. But with Boyzone in particular, I think maybe at first they didn't really sort of have much confidence in them as songwriters, and they were just wanted them to be performers. Later on, definitely Ronan himself showed himself as quite a strong songwriter. There is definitely just that element of, this is a song that people know, and this is the way we can get this band to be known by people. But yeah, covers are definitely a thing. And going back to Eurodance, lots and lots of Eurodance covers and remixes of classic songs.
Yeah, you guys need to get that under control, because people are starting to do it over here and it's driving me crazy.
Yeah, I don't really know how to stop that. It's just, it's part of the way we sort of do music here.
If I'm not mistaken, in my comparative points, Backstreet Boys and NSYNC are essentially the same as Westlife and Boyzone in terms of cultural impact for their era and volume of sales and records broken. What's really then interesting, one of the members of Boyzone passed away.
Yeah.
And we have never had that in our boy band groups. We had Rich Cronin from LFO, one of the guys who said that Lou Pearlman.
Yeah, LFO. But like, that's not no disrespect to him. That's not quite a first stringer breaking all the records artist.
Right.
The equivalent would be like if Lance Bass died.
Yeah.
A secondary person from one of the bigger bands.
100%. And that's that's really, really interesting.
Stephen Gately was like the second guy in Boyzone after Ronan Keating. I don't know that he had any particular hits. I think he had one or two of his own solo hits, but he never really had a career afterwards. I think he went into like theater, which I think a lot of these sort of...
He wrote children's books too.
Oh, did he? Okay, that's quite interesting. Obviously, Ronan then was pretty big for a while. And again, another cover, I think... What was the cover song he did? I don't remember.
He did a million.
Very big. When You Say Nothing at All. I think that was our sort of the biggest song he did that was a cover. But I mean, he was a songwriter in his own right, and I think he was quite equivalent to Gary Barlow in that, like, they were the
big one,
like, creative driving force of their bands, but they never quite had the sort of lasting appeal of someone like Robbie Williams, who just had that, like, star quality, as you'd say.
If I may bring up one other major Euro pop band that I feel like we kind of need to touch on for financial reasons.
Because they're paying us.
I mean, just like, it's a really funny thing, because every now and then, I mean, like, I'm such a big comics guy, and somebody will say to me, you know, what's the best-selling comic ever? Or, like, you know, what's the comic book that sells the most copies? And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the best-selling comic book franchise of all time is X-Men. But if it's a single title you're talking about, the single title who remains in the top 100 New York Times bestseller list the most frequently is the various iterations of Neil Gaiman's Sandman. Now, while Neil Gaiman's Sandman is one of my all-time favorite pieces of fiction ever, I don't believe it is a comic reader's comic book. It is a comic that many people read because of how beautifully self-contained it is, what an expression of the art it is. It's something they know. Everybody knows Neil Gaiman now. And I think that's sort of a thing. So when I say, like, we should talk about it for financial reasons, you would be remiss if you tried to talk about comics in the 80s and 90s without discussing the rise of Neil Gaiman and Vertigo. But the rise of Neil Gaiman and Vertigo doesn't really have a direct impact, because the high point of Vertigo lasted about 2 years and was not the financial success they thought it was. By the time they made Vertigo its own imprint, it was already way too late. That was totally digression. But what I more meant to say was that when we talk about Europop, I feel like you got to talk about the people who dominated the industry in multiple countries. And I don't believe there was quite a band that dominated the industry in multiple countries quite the way the A-Teens did.
The A-Teens?
Yeah, they had their greatest hits is literally every song on their greatest hits is a number one in some country.
Wow.
I've never heard of that band.
The A-Teens? The ABBA cover band?
Wait, they're an ABBA cover band?
No, I've never heard of them.
Oh, holy shit. They are an ABBA cover band.
What the fuck
is
this?
Called A-Teens. They started out as the ABBA Teens.
And then Mr. T joined the band.
And they have sold millions and millions of records around the world. In fact, they even made it big over here in America for a while and received regular radio play on kid-friendly stations like Disney Junior and collections that were repackagings.
So they're kids bop. They're kids bop specifically for ABBA.
But they're kids bop for ABBA in a way that it's not kids bop. Because one of the things about kids bop is, it's a bunch of voices sounding young. And these people were like, no, be sexual, be daring, be urban and young and hip.
Oh, wow.
And they're not like sexy, like, it's not like their dance moves are putting somebody's face between their legs, but there's definitely some, there's some thrusting and there is some innuendo to it. The A-Teens released a few albums. They sold 6 million records in 6 years. Their greatest hits is a series of number ones from around the world. Seriously, they are a Swedish ABBA cover band.
I was gonna say, this sounds like some deep Europe shit.
But, like, this is how serious I am. Like, in Sweden, their first album went 2 times platinum, gold in Austria, gold in Germany, platinum in the Netherlands, platinum in Norway, gold in Sweden, gold in the United States. Their second
That's
album
crazy.
Went gold in Sweden and gold in the United States. We're not talking Jesus. About some band that no one's ever heard of. They had 17 singles. They are responsible for the Lilo and Stitch cover of Can't Help Fallin' in Love. And if I'm not mistaken, I need to do a quick bit of click-click homework for 2 seconds. Yes, the A-Teens were allowed to create their own songs at a certain point.
They became the A-people.
Well, because
they were A-adults.
They were an ABBA cover band. Well, they were an ABBA cover band, and they wanted to record original music, so they had to get, like, permission.
Christ.
I guess eventually you're going to run out of ABBA songs.
At least ones that people care about. Mamma Mia is only 2.5 hours. God help me, I've seen it. They were an international big deal.
I can't believe I've never heard of them, and ABBA are a big deal in Ireland. Anytime somebody comes out with an ABBA cover, it's probably going to go to number one. You go to a normal nightclub, one that isn't playing light club music, one that's playing top 40, there's a good chance you'll hear 3 or 4 ABBA songs, including that really grating ABBA mega mix that people play
that
all
thing.
The time. Yeah, I hate that so much.
Yeah, their first album charted and got certified unit sales, like, you know, like whatever that country's version of gold, platinum, or silver is, in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 countries.
Wow.
How fucking crazy is this that we were just talking about the connected universality of music in Europe, especially pop music that relates to Europop, bringing people together, And I'm talking about a band I knew as a fact was huge in Europe in the 2000s. Like 2000, 2001, I knew they were a big deal in Europe. And they totally missed your radar.
I mean, at that time as well, I wasn't listening to a lot of radio.
I had friends with younger siblings.
Yeah, there's a good chance that just went over my head just through not paying attention.
What is the pop scene like right now? Because over here, we're getting a lot of like really down-tempo, trap-inspired, minimalist kind of pop. What's up over there? And are there any artists here that are just, like, you know, kind of where we're saying, like, we didn't really get a Robbie Williams, we certainly didn't get Westlife, any of that, but, like, is there anyone from America who's just whiffing that you're aware of right now? And what does the pop scene sound like?
I think the pop scene sounds very, very similar to American and, you know, American pop at the moment, because
of course
it's a much more global market now than it was when I was, you know, growing up and listening to now records. There is a lot of that trap influence. There's, you know, you're getting your Katy Perry's and your what have yous, Kesha's, like on the top 10 charts at the moment.
Deservedly so.
I still have to listen to that album. I really need to get around to listening to it. You get a lot of alt pop as well. Bands like Everything Everything and Dua Lipa, I think is the name. Is that the name of that lady?
I don't know if I know that one. Check the liner notes.
According to my research, the last really big crossover Europop group were The Wanted.
Yeah,
that's really,
I would think so.
The last thing that was a humongous deal in Europe before it came over to America and was a big deal for half a second.
We got your EDM a couple of years back. We got like that sort of dubstep influenced dance music that really just took over the radio for a while. But I mean, you've always had your pure pop. You know, your Ed Sheerans are still pretty big here. Lord is fairly huge. Who's after just releasing an album? There's a band called The Script.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys have them. They're Irish. And
we had them about 6-7 years ago.
Their new album just came out, and that's, you know, that's pretty big. People are sort of buzzed about that. The Coronas, I don't know if you guys have heard of those.
No.
They're an Irish rock band, sort of post-punk influence.
Oh, nice.
Which is surprisingly big here, because post-punk is not a popular genre, but they've sort of they've got a sort of an Irish influence. They have violins, they have
Irish punk is actually a thing over here.
Oh yeah, I mean, you've got the Dropkick Murphys and stuff like that, but this is just more of a, there's more of a tinge to it rather than it just being like expressly Irish themed. It's just like somebody took a punk song and hung some Irish drapes on it.
It's as Irish as some fucking idiot from Boston screaming about the Red Sox.
Yeah, pretty much. In fact, the singer of the Coronas, his mother is a very famous Irish singer by the name of Mary Black, sort of a chanteuse type singer, very popular in the 90s. So like that sort of, that family line has continued, I suppose. Hmm. My brother is in a band who had a number one record 2 years ago.
Oh, that's awesome.
By the name of Walking on Cars. They haven't really broken outside of sort of England and Ireland yet. They're really big in Germany for some reason, though.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
If you're going to be big somewhere, be big with Angela.
Is big in Germany like our version of big in Japan?
Everybody's big in Germany. You go to Germany, you go to a Media Mart, which is like their Walmart or their Best Buy. They have a media section that's like a Tower Records. And you can buy anything there. You can buy like J-Rock, you can buy Korean pop music, you can buy literally anything. So there's a massive audience in Germany for a large, varied amount of music.
You finally explained Hasselhoff to America. Thank you.
Yeah, there's just, it's a really big music market, and they sort of devour music. And I think that's why a lot of the techno and house music sort of came from America, but they didn't really become a thing, like a cultural force in Europe, until Germany got a hold of it and then started producing its own stuff.
That's really funny, because we stole Lady Gaga from Europe. And by that I mean, Lady Gaga, for the first two records of her career, made music that sounded an unbelievable amount like, I don't know that I'm allowed to use this term, but there's a term, gay Euro trash.
Yeah.
Basically, Lady Gaga's first two records are nothing but gay Euro trash from the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, strikingly, even the record labels recognized this and kind of tried to pimp her out on Logo, which is a gay network, before she was ever given radio airplay on MTV or VH1. I heard Poker Face before I heard Just Dance by 6 months, because Lady Gaga's music was so targeted at gays early on.
Yeah, definitely.
A huge part of that comes from the fact that the style of music she was making already had a pretty strong foothold in European gay culture. We owe you guys for Lady Gaga, and you guys owe us for EDM. But I have to say, we've talked a lot about Irish music and Irish pop, and I have not yet expressed a guilty pleasure. I can basically sing and also play on guitar every song from the Corrs' first three records.
That's fair enough.
I kind of think the Corrs are phenomenal. Like, they're just such a good time.
I like the Corrs, and I think they do a really good cover of Dreams.
Yes, they do. They do a nice cover of Dreams, in fact. Yes, yeah. They do.
Guitarist Jim has sort of gone off the deep end recently with conspiracy theories and stuff. Though,
oh, no.
So
oh.
I don't know if they're going to be coming back anytime soon.
Oh, Andrian, no.
It must be tough to be the guy in the band with the three hot sisters, though.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he was, like, the lead songwriter, though.
I believe so, yeah.
So I don't think it was too hard for him.
Yeah, I'm sure he's doing just fine with his Scrooge McDuck piles of money and conspiracy theories. What is he a flat earther? I hope he's a flat earther.
I don't believe he's a flat earther, but he's definitely a 9/11 truther.
Oh, no. They have them over there? God damn it.
Yeah.
That is the worst export.
The cultural penetration of 9/11 is just, yeah.
If we can have people that are like, no, I'm telling you, they're hiding vampires in Romania, then they can most certainly have 9/11 truthers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm really sorry that all of my questions were not remotely conducive to getting back to the subject of Now That's What I Call Music.
No, we're not here to talk now. This EP months are a break that we our brains and hearts and ears need. Tom, anything that... Where can people find you out there?
Mostly I just am on Twitter. I'm extremely online there. Under the name Farpush. That's my handle. I pretty much don't do much other than that, to be honest. Follow me on Twitter if you want.
That's fine. That's where I found him from. And I know I told you, like, no recommendations, and we'll cut the dead air if you think about it, but I've seen you post some pretty solid choice cuts of pop music. Anything that you would recommend off the top of your head that probably us, you know, dumb Americans wouldn't know about?
That's a tough question.
There was one I posted in the Now and Again Facebook chat that we have a couple of months ago. I can't remember what the hell it was. It was just a single female pop artist, and I was like, this is awesome. And Joe was like, it's okay. And I was like, fuck you, Jenna.
Is it Shura? It should always be Shura. Shura is the best thing to come out of Europe right now.
I don't remember
Shura.
What it was.
Shura, I've never heard of
that. It wasn't that, because it was definitely from you.
I have no idea what the fuck country she's from, but she makes... It kind of sounds like a mix of when Sia still made good albums and not just good singles. Kind of like Carly Rae Jepsen-esque upbeat 80s pop. You should check it out if you've never heard her. S-H-U-R-A. Shura.
S-H-U-R-A. I'll definitely check that out. Something I've discovered recently is an artist by the name of Tara Lee. Really good sort of ethereal pop music. Definitely worth checking out. If you want to listen to some Irish rap, check out a group by the name of Rusangano Family. I'm going to get you to put a link to that in the show notes, I think, because
yeah.
Nobody's going to be able to spell that from how I pronounced it. They are a couple of African refugees who came over to Ireland and found a DJ, and they just started making tracks and beats together, and it's got some really, really good stuff on it. Just in general, the Rubber Bandits, who are a comedy hip-hop group, but also sort of weirdly socially active... politically aware. Think sort of ICP, but maybe a little less serious than that.
Okay.
But they perform with plastic bags on their heads.
Oh, I've heard and
I think
seen
you
of those.
Might have seen yeah. them. They're sort of, yeah. But they're very good. They're sort of a good laugh. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Also, everyone should watch Sing Street. Just throwing that out there, because I don't get to recommend stuff from current or current-ish times. But that movie's great. Tom, thank you so much. Come on again for like a full episode.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Can I break in with two other things really quick?
Of course, I'll edit them to be normal.
Thank God. I need to say that the proudest moment of my life is that I've gotten through this entire recording experience without doing my impression of a brogue. And I need to be really proud of that.
Yeah, please be proud of that, but just do not continue.
Oh, no, I'm not going to do it. It's really bad.
Everybody's is really bad.
Well, like, my family, like, had them when I was younger.
Yeah.
So, like, I grew up around them. But for some reason, and I took Gaelic lessons for a year. Like, I tried to actually learn Gaelic. Like, Irish heritage was like a big thing in this motherfucking house. My Irish heritage was a big thing in this motherfucking house growing up. So I learned all about the tricky hidden B's and F's and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those. I mean, like, I think Gaelic spoken really... If I tried to speak it really well, it would still sound like marbles falling out of my mouth.
It's a difficult language to speak, but it is beautiful.
Oh, 100%. When the nun who taught us spoke it, it was gorgeous. And when I spoke it, it was a hate crime.
There's such a musicality to it, and I think that's part of why Irish people sort of have that musical gene in them.
Well, and I mean, like, even then, like, Irish music, if we're going to talk about, like, the structure of Irish music, the components behind lilting... Are just like fucking insane. Like, the actual act of lilting, to really get those those slide hits. It's I can't think of a lot of other genres of music outside of like Indian music that really need that level of intense vocal control. That's really astounding.
Are you going to try and do a brogue for me so to see if you'll impress me?
Oh no, it's like it's really bad. No. I'm not kidding. It's really bad. I can do some good impressions. Like I do think my Shaggy impression came out pretty well on the show. And
it wasn't too bad, yeah.
Right? And I can do a pretty okay Tickle Me Elmo. But my brogue is hold on, wait. I don't know if it's going to sound right over the phone, but
Elmo loves you. Hello.
That's a really bad. Elmo. That's not a good brogue at all. That's a shitty brogue.
Okay, I would love to hear Elmo with a brogue. Like Elmo, me love you now. Like I can't see he comes out Jamaican. I don't know what's wrong with me. So ask me to tell you where you can find me so I can go.
Nico, you've got it's October 1st according to my watch. You have some big news. Where can we find you?
Oh, hell yeah. It's October. The first week leading up to October is always New York Super Week, and that's New York Comic Con. You'll be able to find me at my table with LGBTHQ, pawning books of my comic Kid Riot. You can also find me at KidRiotComics.com, as well as for my band at Facebook.com/ActionDuo. As far as me, you can find me at Nico J. Vasillo. No, there's no J. Nico Vasillo on Instagram. And yeah, Comic Con. Yeah! Javits. Yeah. Elmo did a brogue and it sounded like Miss Cleo.
You can find the show at cageclub.me along with the rest of the Cage Club podcasting network and fam. At now, oh no, that's not my Twitter handle anymore. I changed it.
I broke everyone.
It's at Chris Podcasts on Twitter. I changed it. It's much more me now. The show Twitter is dead because I can't handle two Twitters at once. Now and again, cast at gmail.com. Write into the mailbag. Ask us questions or just yell at us.